of or poorly served by the formal financial sector. They struggle in near poverty and cannot fully contribute to or benefit from the global economy. But emerging technologies are making it easier than ever to change that and to build a financially inclusive world. This conversation will provide an expert look at the underbanked on a truly global scale that asks the question, what will it really take to provide affordable and accessible financial services for all? Please join me in welcoming to the stage Wired's Victoria Turk in conversation with CEO of Action, Michael Schlein, and the founder and CEO of World Remit, Ismail Ahmed.
Welcome. Thanks for coming, everyone. I'm Victoria Turk from Wired UK, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Ismail Ahmed from World Remit and Michael Schlein from Action. We'll be talking this morning about the issue of financial inclusion and improving access to financial services on a global scale. So by means of a very brief introduction, I'm sure people here are quite aware of the issue. But I wanted to start by asking you a bit about the issue of financial inclusion. What really is the scope of the problem? Who are we talking about when we're talking about the global unbanked?
So 3 billion people either live in poverty or live near poverty, and they are excluded or really poorly served by the global financial system, and their lives are so much harder because of it. All of us take for granted credit cards, ATMs, debit cards, appropriate insurance, the ability to get a loan for a school or for a home. Half the world doesn't have any of those financial tools, and it's enormously challenging. Just to give a little bit, we also take for granted that your income comes in on a monthly basis and your bills largely come in on a monthly basis. For the most part, a person living in poverty gets paid once a year at the time of the harvest, has to make that money work all year long, and she lacks a safe place to save. Just even think about that. We take for granted a safe place to save, but half the world doesn't even have basic tools like that.
Yeah, it also means for a lot of those billions of unbanked people, their life revolves around cash. So it means, it literally means saving your money under the mattress. And for those people, it means in some countries, to carry an equivalent to $100, you need a wheelbarrow. And you can see, you know, the risks involved in carrying, you know, huge amounts of cash. It means about these people are unable to access credit, other financial services. And so things are quite tough when all your life revolves around cash. You cannot buy things if you're not physically present.
Cash not only gets lost and stolen, but as long as you're living in a purely cash world, you're invisible. You have no trail. You have no credit history. The switch to digital is transformational.
So you're obviously both coming at this from slightly different experience, slightly different positions. Tell me a bit about your approaches to the problem. How do we address this issue?
So Action is a global nonprofit that has been around now for 55 years, dedicated specifically to creating a financially inclusive world and giving the poor tools they need to manage their financial lives. Over our history, we've worked in microfinance, and we've helped to build 65 microfinance institutions in 34 countries that are today serving millions. Over the last several years, we've really become a fintech venture capital investor, and we're probably among the top seed stage investors in fintech for inclusion through something called Venture Lab. And then also last year at the early and growth stage level, we created the world's first global fintech fund for the underserved, a $140 million fund specifically trying to show that you can invest in companies that are trying to make the world a better place and have a great social impact, but also have a great financial return.
And Ismail, obviously World Remit is a company that is working in this space.
And yeah. With the majority of recipients of migrant remittances are unbanked, and that's why probably more than 90% of the remittances are received in cash. So we're one of the companies that are digitizing remittances, particularly not only the send side, but the receive side. So we are connected to mobile money services, enabling people to, people who previously unbanked who now have got a basic mobile money account to receive money. So that's what we're doing. So a part of the companies that are, you know, improving financial inclusion. And probably it's worth saying that, you know, 3 years ago, you know, we had, you know, close to 3 billion unbanked people. Today, the number has significantly dropped because of particularly mobile money services. We have 500 million registered mobile money accounts. And what is a mobile money account? It means somebody with a basic feature phone who can use their mobile number as an account and use that to pay for goods and services. So we're connected to many of those successful mobile money services, and therefore somebody who used to travel to a big city to collect cash can now get the money without leaving their home.
So mobile's obviously been a big tool in helping this issue, but how much is financial inclusion a technology issue?
So to me, financial exclusion is largely a failure of the banking system and a failure of the imagination. For so long, people viewed the base of the pyramid as the distances were insurmountable and the transaction sizes were too small. And basically, fintech is part of the solution, in part because now there's no transaction that's too small and there's no distance that's insurmountable. And also, as we were just saying, in going from cash to digital, you're creating a digital trail that allows you to figure out and make visible billions of people who effectively are not seen by the financial system. So I think fintech is part of the solution.
Part of the solution.
Exactly.
I think it's both a technology and a regulatory issue. The successful mobile money services were launched in countries that have conducive regulatory environments. M-Pesa would not have succeeded if the Central Bank of Kenya did not allow them to test and support what was an innovative technology. So in the countries we've seen that don't have that kind of a supportive regulatory environment, mobile money has not succeeded. So it is both, yes. So, but obviously you need the technology first. I think some technology companies have done a great job in terms of convincing regulators, because often regulators are implementing things, you know, laws that were, you know, set up, implemented many years ago. So they're always skeptical of new, particularly financial services, which they might consider very risky. So some companies like M-Pesa have done a great job in terms of educating the central bank, especially when banks were lobbying against allowing banking institutions to manage people's funds.
So what technologies are you currently seeing that you think are really sort of pushing forward in this area? Have you got any examples of things that you think are really working?
The most exciting thing is the explosion of data and data analytics. Historically, credit has only been available to people who have already repaid loans successfully. Well, that ignores, you know, billions of people. Of those billions of people, 85% of them do have cell phones, and increasingly they have smartphones. And the ability to use that data and analyze that data is highly predictive, and therefore all of a sudden you can determine who you can make a loan to and not. We've invested in a couple of companies that are doing exactly that. That's using cell phone data, but there's also utility data, there's also social network information, and then there's creating new information, behavioral analytics, little interactive tests that allow you to determine whether or not that individual is likely to repay. They're forward-looking instead of backward-looking.
Whole range of new services have now been built on top of the successful mobile money services. So we have credit loan platforms, crowdfunding platforms, particularly in Africa now. So according to the World Bank, in the I think the next couple of years, the crowdfunding in Africa will get to close to $100 billion.
Wow.
So there are platforms that are building services that allow people to not only receive remittances but also to receive funding, for social as well as for private. So there's all whole range of new innovative products built on top of mobile money services.
And just, remittances alone and World Remit is a great company. If you think about traditional remittance companies, they're ripe for disruption, and a digital approach can reduce prices by 70, 80, 90%.
And Michael, obviously you at Axio and you also invest in fintech companies. So what are you looking for to invest in?
So we're completely focused on disruptive companies that are harnessing new technologies that really can change the world. And we believe that not only can they have a huge social impact, but also a great financial return. So we have a network all around the world. We've looked at thousands of companies to make about 40 investments so far, specifically in financial technology to promote financial inclusion. So that's really what we look for. Social impact first, but financial returns are very important.
And Ismail, what stage do you think we are at now in terms of addressing the problem of financial inclusion? Where do things stand and what's the next challenge?
Well, I think we've made a lot of progress. I was in Nairobi in March to join the M-Pesa, which was celebrating 10 years of mobile money. M-Pesa was the pioneer of mobile money. So you can see that how much we've progressed in the last 10 years. But I think, in the next 10 years, we think at least 2 billion people will have mobile money accounts.
Yes.
So there's still a lot more to do. And I think the hugely successful mobile money services have convinced the doubters, particularly regulators in some parts of the world, to give a chance to some of the telcos or come up with models that can work for the bottom of the pyramid. Yeah. So that's what we're likely to see in the next few years.
So I have a slightly different view, but it's also a question of what's your real goal. We're trying to create a financially inclusive world. I do think that the rise of mobile money and M-Pesa has changed the world and is growing significantly. And we've seen the Global Findex has had hundreds of millions of accounts have been opened. But those accounts are largely dormant, and mobile money today is still largely person-to-person transfers and mobile phone top-ups. Our vision is a financially inclusive world where you have all those tools you need to manage your life. By that measure, I think we're in very, very early days. I think, which is why we as an investor are willing to experiment and see what's going to work. And I think we're starting to see things that are work. And I think over the next 10 years, you will get to scale. But that's sort of a different vision. It's a financially inclusive vision. And it's one where everyone has the tools they need to manage their lives.
So if we're in early days now, what will it take to get there? What are the major challenges that you're facing today?
I think, I would say, probably some of the biggest challenges when it comes to helping unbanked people to access formal financial services is about identity. How do you identify somebody who has never had a bank account? And so I think there are a lot of exciting new technologies like digital identities. Some countries are experimenting, trying to leapfrog and come up with things that have not been tried in the West. So I would say probably that is the most challenging one now, especially in the current climate where, anti-money laundering regulations are only becoming tougher. So, how do you convince the regulators that you've successfully identified somebody who doesn't have any credit history? So that's really the biggest challenge, I think.
I think there's a confluence of a bunch of things that are really exciting in this space. I think there's no shortage of innovative entrepreneurs trying to do extraordinary things. Increasingly, we're seeing capital. And again, we're trying to help capital find those innovative ideas. Plus, you're seeing big companies start to pay attention. Several of them are here, but MasterCard, JP Morgan, TIAA, MetLife, Credit. These are companies that are seriously looking at the base of the pyramid as a market, which is transformational. And again, these entrepreneurial startups, I think they're startups, so they're risky. Some of them are going to fail. Some of them can change the world.
And so Ishmael, you mentioned that obviously regulation is one of the sort of key difficulties of working in this area. It's one thing talking about, you know, the big companies and the startups that are innovating, but what is the role of government and regulators in helping to solve this issue?
I think the difficulty we face, I think, when it comes to new technologies and the fast-changing environment we live, and regulation is that, you know, it takes some time to pass new legislation. I mean, look at the fourth anti-money laundering directive, EU's fourth anti-money laundering directive. It is out of date before it has been implemented, so the Commission has now drafted the fifth anti-money laundering directive. So that is the challenge we face. So we probably need to relook at and educate regulators and governments as to how they could come up with things that can move with the speed of change we're seeing. I think, of course, because of the, again, I mean, go back to mobile money, regulators have seen what technology, particularly fintech, can do for local economies. So some countries are experimenting with sandbox programs that allow technology companies to bypass the, you know, or get an exemption from the regulation. So UK did that, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, with just recently got a sandbox approval in Malaysia to allow us to try electronic verification methods in Malaysia for the first time. So there are a lot of those. So regulators and governments are trying now, learning from the success of those early innovations.
So Axion has partnered with the Economist Intelligence Unit over the last several years to rank 65 governments with what they do to promote financial inclusion and the depth of the market. And so in one place, you can see who's doing what well, and you can see the progress, and we rank them. So people, you know, countries go up and down on this ranking. One of the things that we've seen is the most success, it comes from the intentionality. If you can get the government to have a financial inclusion strategy, that is the key indicator and a lot of progress, because that's bringing everyone together. But things like universal IDs, things like mobile money regulation, coordination among regulators, because all of a sudden you have to regulate the mobile network operators and the financial services, and you have to bring that together. India is really leading the way in with a dozen different initiatives, including payment banks and universal ID, the Aadhaar, with 1.3 billion people, and most recently demonetization, which is taking cash out of Indian society and really dramatically pushing people towards digital currencies. I think it's the verdict is out yet, but we'll see if other countries follow that model. But if that is, we're pushing people along aggressively on this path to financial inclusion.
So what would your advice be for companies that are looking to start working in this space? Obviously, it must be a bit daunting with all of this to come up against.
Really, it's about partnering, because I do think you want to work with companies that are growing in the key markets, and it's finding the right partners. And frankly, so we have built partnerships with dozens of companies around the world, and some of the big financial institutions have partnered with us just to see that pipeline, just to see who's out there, and just to see what's working and what's not working, and then they can invest in them, hire them, buy them, or copy them.
I agree. I think that is the greater the challenge, the bigger the opportunity. Yeah. So I think you have greater opportunities in this space than probably very crowded fintech space elsewhere. So I think for anybody who's thinking about a startup, there are a lot of opportunities in this space. And I think the way you could do about it is that, I think we often, when we talk about regulations, we often complain and say regulators have refused to give us this and that. I think you need to understand where they are coming from and try to educate them. We talk to a lot of particularly mobile money companies that have convinced regulators, and what they tell us is that they persisted, went to the lobbied governments and regulators to show them what they are doing, sort of.
Great. Well, we're running out of time soon, so I'd like to end with just one last question, which is just bringing it back to the real point of this discussion, really. And that is, aside from helping individuals, what is the benefit of increasing access to financial services? Why do we want to do this?
Yeah.
So I'll tell you a client story. I met a client in India, a woman named Radha Devi, who I met her on the day that she had successfully repaid her first loan. And this was the day she was getting her second loan. And she told me that she was scared and frightened, and she had used the initial loan to buy a second sewing machine. But the day I met her, she had already repaid it, and she was borrowing a second time. And she was so proud and so empowered. And so beyond the tools just to make her life better, which again, we can take for granted, there's a sense of empowerment that I think comes from financial inclusion. So that's part of our vision as well.
Apart from the individual benefits, I think the economies would benefit from digitization and financial inclusion because it increased security and transparency. Telcos in particular know their customers better, and you know, digital transactions have an audit trail, whereas cash doesn't. You can see what is happening in economies that have embraced digitization. I mean, the Kenya economy was revised upwards by 25% in 2014, largely because of the shift from informal to formal economy, helped by M-Pesa. Interesting that at the same time, Italy revised its GDP upwards because the EU allowed them to include the mafia economy, drugs and prostitution, that boosted its GDP and helped actually Italy to come out of the financial crisis, the recession. But in emerging economies, you have genuine economic activities that are in the informal sector that is not captured within the GDP.
Absolutely.
So digitization allows the shift from informal to formal.
A recent study by McKinsey and the Gates Foundation estimated that a digitally financially inclusive world would add $4.2 trillion to the economy, which is average of 6% to GDP, which means in certain countries it would be significantly more than 6%. So that's sort of the size of the prize if we could really get there, and I think we are on that path.
Well, let's hope so. That's our time up. Thanks so much for joining us, Ishmael and Michael. And enjoy the rest of the conference, everyone.
Great. Thank you.